It's Friday, May 29th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams reporting from Washington. Coming up, Asian defense chiefs meet in Singapore amid rising maritime tensions. Shanghai hosts a huge consumer electronics show. The Rohingyas of Myanmar describe their struggles.
They've been suffering down there endlessly. Nobody's helping them. If you ask to most of the Rohingya, you'll hear the same story. People are suffering almost for decades.
And the recent death of blues legend B.B. King is shrouded in controversy. It's all ahead. Defense chiefs from 26 countries are meeting in Singapore Friday at a time of escalating tension in the South China Sea. The Shangri-La dialogue takes place just days after the release of an assertive Chinese defense white paper and a blunt reaction from U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter, leading to increased fears of a maritime clash between China and the United States. VOA Southeast Asia correspondent Steve Herman is at the meeting. So, Steve, at the moment of this gathering of defense chiefs who are meeting in Singapore, of course, they're meeting during this time of rising tension. Currently, what are officials there, looking at? What is the sort of the mood there at the moment?
Well, we'll hear public comments from the U.S. Secretary of Defense and other defense ministers on Saturday. Today was the day for the bilateral meetings, and all, they're supposed to be defense chiefs from 26 countries gathering. And, of course, this coming at a time of escalating tension in the South China Sea. And that's certainly going to be at the top of the agenda for some of the officials here.
Now, I know there's a delegation from China. Have they commented publicly, at the meeting about the recent tensions?
Oh, it really hasn't kicked off at this hour. We expect that there will be some comments on Saturday and Sunday. The Chinese Foreign Ministry did make some comments today, essentially chastising the United States for speaking out against China's building up on disputed islands, as well as criticizing the Philippines for what it says is an illegal occupation of some of these small islets. And we expect to hear more as the weekend goes on from the Chinese officials, including an admiral and a senior colonel.
Because there has been reports, and I believe today there has been a report that U.S. surveillance has detected Chinese military weapons on at least one of the artificial islands built by China in this Spratly region.
That's correct. An American official, a Pentagon spokesperson, has confirmed that they're aware that there's this mobile artillery system on one of these islands. And the Chinese Foreign Ministry has declined to commented on it. The U.S. official here has said very little about it so far, besides the fact that they're aware of it. But obviously, these are among the things that are upsetting U.S. and other officials, because the Chinese have said that these islands would be for civilian purposes.
Thanks very much, Steve. That's Steve Herman reporting from Singapore. Electronic gadgets are a huge success in China, judging by the first Asian consumer electronics show held this week in Shanghai. Over the course of 2 days, more than 20,000 visitors watched, tested, and played with useful and some less useful electronic devices exhibited by about 200 manufacturers. VOA's George Pudich has more.
Much like the world-famous Las Vegas Consumer Electronics Show, CES for short, the first Chinese exhibition of must-have gadgets is seen as a trendsetter for the next year. CES Asia Director John Kelly says gadget manufacturers are showing great enthusiasm for the Chinese market.
There's a rising middle class here in China with disposable income. There's a lot of technology enthusiasts here. Just the sheer size of the market. These are all factors that play into why companies put such an emphasis on this marketplace.
Many of the exhibits looked like low-priced spin-offs of already popular devices. A company called AltoTech demonstrated its device called Cool Glass One, looking very much like the Google Glass. Another, JD Smart, attracted attention with its voice-activated speaker called Ding Dong. There are also drones and smart home devices. Car manufacturers exhibited models with advanced electronics, such as Volkswagen's gesture control information and entertainment system. But tech industry analyst TZ Wong says he expected more from this first edition of the Asian CES.
I would like to see for the next edition more careful selection of exhibitors, especially in terms of what they bring and the differentiation. There's too many similar things here in this edition.
One of the hits was a robotic cook built by the British company Moli Robotics, skillfully preparing a crab cream soup. Although not yet ready for the market, the company says someday this robotic chef will be able to prepare many more recipes downloaded from the internet. The Consumer Electronics Association, which unites 2,000 tech companies, says in 2014 the world spent around $1 trillion on electronic devices, one-third of it in Asia, whose market is still expanding. George Putich, VOA News, Washington.
A robotic chef. Well, joining me here in the studio is web desk editor Andrew Polshevsky with a look at what's trending today. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, that robotic chef sounds like it could be trending by the end of the day.
It does.
I want to know where I can get one.
Yeah.
This morning, though, as we've been talking about all week, FIFA is trending. Specifically, it's hashtag FIFA Congress. FIFA's voting today on whether to renew Sepp Blatter's term as president of the organization. The interesting thing about this is that people can follow along now on social media, so you get live updates and commentary. There was just a report out that there was a bomb threat called on the FIFA Congress. It was thankfully just a threat, not a real bomb, but people taking to Twitter, making jokes, saying, let them back in anyway. So not a lot of love for Twitter, or excuse me, not a lot of love for FIFA on Twitter this morning. On a more serious note, hashtag Texas flooding. Here in the U.S. state of Texas, there's been some terrible storms. Dozens of people have been either killed or missing. And there's a viral video that's going around the internet of this family. They have this house barricaded, and all of a sudden, a river that's flooded rushes through the front door, and within 30 seconds, their water is, you know, about 10 or 12 feet high in the house, and they're filming it from the second floor. And it's just amazing the devastation that you see, and amazing how quickly this video is spread as a way to show that. And on a lighter note, we have here in the U.S. the Scripps National Spelling Bee. This is kind of a fun thing every year where middle school students from around the country compete in this big spelling bee. They show it on ESPN, the sports channel here in the U.S. The two winners this year, and this is a rarity. Last year there were two winners as well. This year there are two winners. But it's only the fifth time in the competition's history there have been two co-winners. Are Vanya Shivashankar and Gokul Venkatakalan. These two middle schoolers had to spell two words, Scherenschnitte, which is a German word meaning the art of cutting paper. It's Scherenschnitte. They had to spell that word correctly, and they did.
Oh.
The other word, Nunatak, which is a glacial ridge, Nunatak. So more power to these kids because they were able to spell these words that are just absolutely kind of ridiculous. But again, this has, you know, been a trending topic. People pick out their favorites during the competition. They follow along with them on social media. And congratulations to the two winners, Vanya and Gokul.
Absolutely. Being a terrible speller myself, I have nothing but admiration for them. Thanks very much, Andrew. That's web desk editor Andrew Polshevsky.
This is Science in a Minute. I'm Rick Pantaleo. NASA plans to build on the success of its Curiosity rover mission with its next Mars lander mission called Interior Exploration using Seismic Investigations, Geodesy, and Heat Transport, or InSight for short. NASA recently announced that testing has begun at its Jet Propulsion Laboratory on the InSight mission's stationary lander, which is scheduled for launch in 2016. The InSight mission will be the space agency's first mission that will be devoted to exploring the interior structure of Mars. Scientists hope InSight will provide some evidence about the formation and evolution of all rocky planets, including our own Earth. Unlike Curiosity and other Mars rovers such as Spirit and Opportunity, the InSight lander will not roam across the red planet, but instead remain in a fixed position throughout its mission. And that's your Science in a Minute.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Officials in India say the death toll from a massive heat wave has risen to more than 1,800 people. Most of the victims of the dizzying temperatures have been in the southern states of Andhra Pradesh and Telangana. Indian authorities have urged people to stay in the shade, cover their heads, and drink plenty of water. Some children are turning to local fountains to cope with the sweltering heat this week. In New Delhi, the capital, the demand for electricity for operating air conditioners has drained the power grid, leaving thousands of people without power. Monsoon rains are expected in the south in the next few days before sweeping across the country. We'll be back in a moment.
This is Joe Palca for VOA News. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Ann Richard is in Thailand to attend a one-day meeting of Southeast Asian countries and rights groups discussing possible strategies in dealing with the boat people problem in the Andaman Sea and Bay of Bengal. She says the situation is in need of a well-defined response. Nigeria's new president, Muhammadu Buhari, the first Nigerian to defeat a sitting president in popular elections, has taken the oath of office in a festive ceremony in Abuja. Mr. Buhari was sworn in Friday, the ceremony attended by dozens of heads of state, including U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. A coalition of Syrian rebel fighters led by an al-Qaeda branch took over the last government-held city in northwestern Idlib province, bordering Turkey. Iraqi security officials say two car bombs exploded at two five-star hotels in Baghdad, killing at least 10 people. The Kremlin says a new presidential decree classifying Russian military losses in peacetime has nothing to do with Ukraine. Reporting from Washington, Joe Palca, VOA.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. Coming up, an investigation into the recent death of blues legend B.B. King is underway. Well, until recently, relatively few Westerners knew about the Rohingya, a Muslim ethnic group within Myanmar, formerly Burma, that had been the target of ethnic violence, internal displacement, and forced detention. But for several weeks, the world has watched as Rohingyan refugees have negotiated the high seas in rickety boats, hoping to gain entry to neighboring Thailand, Malaysia, or Indonesia and start a new life. Often, they've been abandoned to their fate. Several have died of thirst and exposure. VOA's Adam Phillips asked two Rohingyan activists living abroad what it's like to watch from afar as their people suffer and the world stands by. Adam, give us some background about this situation.
Well, the Rohingya are commonly considered one of the most oppressed minorities in the world. They're Muslims. Some people say they've been there only since the middle of the 19th century, although Rohingya themselves think that they're native. They've been scapegoated by the military government since the early 80s, where their rights have been severely restricted. And since 2012, they've been the subject of a lot of ethnic cleansing and violence by Buddhists, mostly instigated by the government.
Well, did you speak to anybody?
Yeah, well, I spoke to one guy, Tun Kin, who is an activist. He's actually living in the UK now. He was not able to go to university since he was not considered a Burmese citizen. He had lots of friends who'd been in prison because they got married secretly instead of waiting the 2 or 3 years and paying the bribe to an official. He doesn't even believe in the word riots. He doesn't think that they were riots in 2012. He thinks they were government-inspired. Here's what he told me.
Because of that, more than 140,000 Rohingya become internally displaced people. And they push in them camps, and then the government block humanitarian aid, denying the right to have food, denying the right to have medical treatment, denying the right to move from one place to another, denying the right to have child, and Rohingyas are facing genocide.
Adam, are there Rohingyan expats in New York, and did you speak to any of them?
Yes, I did. There are very, very few here, probably less than 50. But I did speak to Nason U, who is a student protest leader, who is now in exile here in New York. Both of his parents are Rohingyan. They were expelled from their jobs during the 80s, and a lot of his relatives' houses were burned down.
One of my uncles killed, and then we can't even find him. My aunties, you know, my relatives, they had to go into the concentration camp. They've been suffering down there endlessly. Nobody's helping them. If you ask to most of the Rohingya, you'll hear the same story. People are suffering almost 4 decades. Because of that, they have to flee the country.
I understand that many of these so-called boat people have been in touch.
Yes, they're in touch with people because as they float on the high seas, often without food or water, they come so close to the neighboring countries like Thailand that they actually get cell reception. Tun Kin actually spoke to some people on these boats.
It's very shocking. I couldn't control my tears when I heard children are crying and women are screaming, please help us, please save us, please tell the world what situation we are facing.
Does he think the media focus will result in more aid?
No, he's actually pretty pessimistic about that. He thinks that with so many natural resources and the so-called opening to Burma from the West, that people will be much more interested in not angering the Burmese government than they are in helping with human rights. But Nathan Nu thinks he can help from this distance. He's not quite so pessimistic. Here's what he said.
At least I can reach to the people to raise the issue of our problems. You know, I can go to the congressman, work together, get more assistance and more awareness, can go to the United Nations and, as a delegation. This is a good thing.
That report by VOA's Adam Phillips in New York.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's premier newsmaker interview program. If you have ideas for guests or topics or want to comment on one of our programs, please write to us at Press Conference USA, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. That's Press Conference USA, Voice of America, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or if you have access to the Internet, send us an email to pcusa@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is pcusa@voanews.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
Blues guitar legend B.B. King died last week, and while fans continue to remember and pay their respects, like other music greats, his death has now become shrouded in controversy. My colleagues David Byrd and Ray McDonald settled into the studio to sort through what's going on.
Now here it is, 3 o'clock in the morning. Can't even close my eyes.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dave Byrd. Thousands of fans and mourners jammed Beale Street in Memphis, Tennessee this week to pay respects to blues legend B.B. King. The 89-year-old guitarist and singer died May 14th, but how he died has become a source of some controversy. To find out more, VOA's Ray McDonald joins us in the studio. Ray, what is this controversy about?
Well, you know, about 30 years ago, Cyndi Lauper had a minor hit single with a song called Money Changes Everything. And I think it's one of the most honest songs ever made, because money does change everything, especially when you have a legendary musician like B.B. King. B.B. passed away on May 14th at age 89. He'd struggled with diabetes for years. He suffered a series of small strokes. Now, even before he died, his two daughters, Patty King and Karen Williams, wanted police to investigate his manager, Laverne Tony, and Tony's assistant, Myron Johnson. They were saying that these two men were neglecting and abusing B.B. King. And immediately after his death, they accused Tony and Johnson of poisoning him.
Now, I saw an article that said that one of the reasons they've brought this dispute is because B.B. King didn't leave them very much money. He left them like $4,000 or $5,000 each.
He left them $3,000 and $5,000.
Yeah, and the rest went to an educational foundation that he founded.
Right, right. B.B. King lost his parents at an early age, and he was forced to fend for himself, and so his own education was curtailed, and so he has set up the bulk of his estate to take care of college expenses for his family.
A second autopsy has been done on his body, but it will take a while to get the results of that, won't it?
It's going to take 6 to 8 weeks. Now, initially it was reported that the Las Vegas police were investigating B.B.'s death as a homicide. They say not yet. They will not move forward with any investigation unless the coroner determines that King's death arose from unusual circumstances. So it's going to take us a couple months to clear this up.
Do you think this is going to tarnish the memory people will have of B.B. King at all?
I don't. I really don't. I think his decades of music and performing all over the world are definitely going to outlive this very short-lived controversy.
All right, that's VOA's Ray McDonald. We invite your commentary on this. You can log on to our website, www.voanews.com. Be sure to listen for Ray's Top 5 Countdown every week as well. If you don't hear it on the radio, you can hear it on our website. Again, that's voanews.com.
To listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks for joining us, and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The first democratically elected president of Tunisia since the revolution of 2011, Beji Caid Essebsi, visited Washington recently along with members of his cabinet and Tunisia's parliament, and met with senior U.S. officials, including President Barack Obama, Vice President Joe Biden, and the Secretaries of Commerce, Defense, Treasury, and State. The visit highlights the importance of U.S.-Tunisia relations as Tunisia continues its journey of democratic transformation, which, since 2011, has included a revolution ousting a long-term dictator, multiple free and fair elections, and the crafting of a new constitution rooted in the rule of law and recognition of the human rights of all people, including women and minorities. Secretary of State John Kerry noted that what has occurred in Tunisia in the last 4 years sends the world an important message, that democratic institutions, while sometimes difficult in the transition, can succeed when they have courageous leadership and when they have compromise. On May 20th, with President Caid Essebsi in attendance, Secretary Kerry and Tunisian Minister Advisor for Political Affairs Mohsen Marzouk signed a memorandum of understanding between the United States and Tunisia, spelling out the wide range of bilateral cooperation and programs, including economic development, security, and people-to-people ties. Secretary Kerry said the memorandum makes clear U.S. support for Tunisia's democratic transition and will bolster a country leadership team that has really been steadfast in its support of Tunisia's remarkable democratic progress. On May 21st, President Obama and President Caid Essebsi released a joint opinion piece in the Washington Post newspaper. In it, the two leaders said that Tunisia shows that democracy is not only possible, but also...
Woman is my destiny, she said. Shut up and dance, don't you dare.